Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Thomas Kleiner-Brockhoff, who is a senior transatlantic fellow at the German Marshall Fund of the United States, where he leads the Eurofuture project, which explores the economics, the governance, and geostrategic dimensions of the euro crisis from a transatlantic perspective. Previously, he was a fellow at the Center for European Studies at Harvard University, was a witness to the United States Congress, and has published widely in Europe and the United States. Additionally, he's a member of the German Council on Foreign Relations. Welcome to Background Briefing, Thomas Kleiner-Brockhoff.
Thanks for having me.
And the Market Composited Purchasing Managers Index, the PMI, is reporting that Germany's economy slowed to near stagnation last month, while France has recorded its biggest contraction for 4 years. So we've been led to believe that Germany is kind of the engine of the Eurozone, and to some extent it props up the euro. That was the only bright light as in the last 2 or 3 years of dismal news from the Eurozone. So are we to be concerned?
That's still true. Germany is still the locomotive, but that locomotive is slowing. And the reason for that, of course, is that it's not two different eurozones. There's Germany and there's the rest. No, they're all connected. Germany is an export-driven economy. 60% of its exports go to other European countries. So the economic situation in the rest of Europe does not leave Germany unaffected.
So, in other words, the fact that the Italian economy is contracting and there's no leadership, there's a complete political vacuum in Italy, that's got to be a concern. We know about Greece, it's been an ongoing concern. And then more recently, we had Cyprus, which by any measure was not handled well. Would you agree?
Oh, I think it's a complete disaster in terms of the political handling of this. No, but it all makes clear that the Eurozone economy is an integrated economy with a non-integrated political system. That's their problem. That's also why governments have a stake in each other's well-being. That's why you're seeing this drive for structural reform in order to lay the foundations of future sustainable growth. Now, the question is, can you get there? Can you actually dissolve this reform and the political price you pay for reform, and finally, the economic price you pay for reform, will it bear out in the end? And is it politically sustainable? And of course, such a drive cannot last forever. At what point will you see green shoots? We've been led to believe that by the end of the year you would see these. You would see a recovery. Now they're pushing out the dates of that recovery as we speak.
So nobody, I think, thinks that France is in good shape, as indeed is the case in Spain with 55% youth unemployment. Then you have Italy, as I mentioned, that doesn't even have a government at the moment, and there's no clear sign that they will have one. And then you had the recent fiasco in Cyprus, which really you just described in a sense, Thomas. You know, in order to get a bailout, they had to raise money, which infuriated the people, and they had a choice between popular unrest and bankruptcy, and they're hardly out of the woods. So that's not exactly going away, is it, that problem?
No, but Cyprus is sort of a special case. It's an offshore banking center. It has a business model based on that. That model went belly up. It is very hard to fix the problem without fixing the underlying problem, which is the offshore banking model. So I think that Cyprus is going to fall on very tough times. Yes, there is going to be a bailout, but it also has to reinvent itself, and it has options to reinvent itself as it is in the middle of an energy boom that might reverse its fortunes over time. Now, the recession that is certain to come out of the Cyprus crisis will set in immediately, while the economic opportunity of a changed business model will at best set in years. That is the time gap, and that is the political problem to overcome in Cyprus, but on a larger scale in most of southern Europe.
Well, I suppose the connection, though, with Cyprus and the overall euro crisis is that their banking system went belly up because they invested heavily in Greek debt, didn't they? Apart from the fact that it's a sort of casino economy with a lot of Russian money being laundered in its banks.
That indeed was an additional problem for the countries bailing out, because they didn't want to bail out rich Russians stacking up money in Cyprus. So the situation there was triggered by a decision that was taken years ago. None of these conditions were unknown to the leaders of the Eurozone when they accepted Cyprus into the Eurozone. So they themselves have been co-conspiring in creating this problem by looking the other way when decision time time to decide whether or not Cyprus was to be accepted without cleaning up their banking sector.
So, Thomas Kleiner-Brockhoff, back to the German economy and the engine of the euro, the locomotive, as you refer to it, and it's not running out of gas, but it's sputtering at the moment. Presumably that has a lot to do with the fact that it's an integrated economy with the rest of Europe, and the rest of Europe is simply not buying anything because it's in recession. So is that the trap that Germany's in?
Germany is two things. It's a European economy and it's a global economy. Its growth rates in the past years mostly came from the global economy, especially its heavy exposure to China. That is still true today. That's why you're seeing a better economic performance because of its global competitiveness in Germany than in other European countries, especially compared with France that has been losing international competitiveness. So the concern in Germany is that its biggest trading partners are struggling. Germany's biggest trading partners are France, which needs to reform and it can't seem to muster the political will to change its structures of competitiveness. And the second concern that Germans have is about the U.S., because the U.S. is one of the big three trading partners for the country, and the Germans don't see the Americans reform as they should. They don't see bring their budget deficit. Control their budget deficit, and they don't see them even having talked and agreed on far-reaching structural reforms, which the Germans believe are necessary in the U.S. Therefore, they're concerned about two out of three of their biggest trading partners.
Well, obviously, they must be aware of the political dysfunction in Washington, right?
They have enough political dysfunction in Brussels to have quite an understanding of what that is like.
So tell me about that. Well, it's not political dysfunction in Germany, but there's an election going on. And what's happening in terms of this issue that we're talking about, which has got to be a big political issue? It has been for some time. One of the reasons why Angela Merkel has been reluctant to bail out, particularly the Greeks, on a number of occasions, has been popular sentiment is so much against it at home. What's happening there in terms of how this euro crisis is impacting the political race in Germany?
Well, this works both ways. First of all, the German election is impacting the eurozone crisis because nothing much is happening on the European level because the Germans aren't moving. The Germans aren't agreeing to anything because they don't want to upset their electorate. So you have a bit of a political stagnation during this campaign on the European level. Conversely, the situation is impacting the campaign itself. One would think that the opposition would pound the chancellor for her policies, but they don't. They don't for a number of reasons. First of all, her European policies are widely popular in the country. That is why her approval ratings are sky high, and the likelihood that she's being voted out of office is relatively low, very low, in fact. The question is rather, what is the coalition that she can form? There, the race is completely open, and the major opposition party has a hard time opposing her, and it's getting even harder the more you see pictures of her with a mustache appearing in southern European protests that make her look more like Charlie Chaplin than, as intended, like Adolf Hitler. That is sort of has the effect of people rallying around the flag, that the chancellor, the democratically elected chancellor of the republic, would be mocked as Germany's dictator, has people have the effect of supporting Merkel, even if they have doubt about her domestic policy. Therefore, the opposition has a hard time opposing her directly on it. She needs to, the opposition needs to support her against unwarranted, what they think is unwarranted attacks.
So, but the fact that she's become sort of untouchable in a sense because of German people feeling insulted by how countries in the South are portraying their leadership and by extension the German people and making references to the Nazi past, I mean, how much is this evident in news coverage, for example? Because, I mean, looking at the Cyprus recent demonstrations, the posters, a lot of them were, as you described, she was the whipping boy or the whipping girl, I guess, in her case, in this she's been blamed. So how do the German people feel that so many people in the South blame Germany for their problems?
That's a completely new situation for the German population, and it's sort of slowly dawning on them that something has changed. They don't like to be put in the position of the bad boys and girls. They are used to being the good people. That's what the post-war, the benefit of the post-war situation was. They were hardly they were only partially sovereign. They could sort of hide behind the big NATO alliance or the Americans or the French, the British. They weren't in a leadership position. The crisis has thrown them in a leadership position, and it's ugly out there. It's when you're in a leadership position. It's the wind is cold, and all of a sudden the German people realize that they're not all popular. And they don't like that. They feel unfairly treated because haven't they sort of reached out and lent a helping hand, and now they're being blamed for it. So it's a completely new situation that, to my surprise, hasn't resulted in a larger Eurosceptic movement in Germany quite yet. Because you could imagine people responding to this and saying, we're helping you and you're blaming us. Why don't you go to hell? Why don't you, we don't need to do this, so let's turn inward. But that's not what seems to be happening in the country. The pro-European sentiment is tested but not broken.
Well, but your earlier point, though, Thomas Kleiner-Brockhoff, again, the senior transatlantic fellow at the German Marshall Fund of the United States, former fellow at the Center for European Studies at Harvard University and a member of the German Council on Foreign Relations. You mentioned earlier that you have economic integration in Europe via the euro, but you don't have political integration, and that's the problem. It's in a nutshell. How do you get the political process to catch up and find some political consensus when clearly these governments, like in Greece and Italy and Spain, their people are furious, and in many ways they're blaming Germany instead of their own governments for the problems. And there's no sense, at least from my perspective, that there's any movement on the getting the political house in order so that you can in turn get the economic house in order.
Well, I think one should focus sort of on the on what has been accomplished and what the consequences of that will be. You have seen the Eurozone countries diverging economically and having based their economics on a bubble economy. That bubble has burst, It has been replaced by a policy of 2 or 3 years of deep structural reform. It is you can already see in Portugal, in Spain, in Ireland that these policies are bearing fruit, but not to the degree that it would be a complete turnaround of fortunes in these economies. I would say it's a race now. The question whether Spain can turn around fast enough before the political environment is too fragile to support their government and to support a pro-European policy, or whether economic reforms will come through is an open question. And what European governments and the European Union can do now is help and support these governments in buying time for these reforms to bear fruit.
But I thought these reforms were largely, the word used to describe these reforms has been austerity, and it appears that people are not reacting well, to say the least, to austerity, and the austerity programs themselves are the ones that are creating the political backlash.
Well, the policy of austerity has two components. One is a fiscal component, and that is the fiscal adjustment that you've seen, and the other is the structural reforms. The fiscal part was necessary because the market didn't lend to these countries anymore, and they would have gone bankrupt had you not adjusted the fiscal position. And somewhat unfairly, the structural reforms are also attributed to austerity, while they, in fact, are the long-term foundations of the viability of an economy. That is what has started with the Monti government in Italy. That has started years ago in the Portuguese context, and it has already borne some success in Spain.
Well, just in closing, Thomas Kleine-Brocker, let's just talk about for a second the European Central Bank's saying today that they stand ready to act on interest rates if the Eurozone economy weakens further. This is a statement from Mario Draghi that they will cut interest rates as early as next month. Is that going to do anything? We've done that here in the United States, of course.
Well, that will be helpful. But when interest rates are close to zero already, you can't go much lower than zero. So the effects of that will be limited. The central bank has done its major, has contributed majorly with its so-called OMT program, and the announcement that it will do everything to save the Eurozone, which is a reversal of policy and has brought down the spreads and the borrowing costs for southern European economies tremendously. So it has done its share, and today's announcement shows that it will do on the interest rate side what it is capable of doing, although there is very little still to do.
Well, Thomas Kleine-Brockhoff, I thank you so much for joining us here.
Thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Thomas Kleine-Brockhoff, who is a senior transatlantic fellow at the German Marshall Fund of the United States, where he leads the Euro Future Project, which explores the economic, the governance, and geostrategic dimensions of the Euro crisis from a transatlantic perspective. Previously, he was a fellow at the Center for European Studies at Harvard University and has testified to the United States Congress and has published widely in Europe and the United States. And additionally, he's a member of the German Council on Foreign Relations. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And I'll be back again on Sunday at 11 a.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Time was high in America. A lady dressed in white.
fire.